Day, March 14th, and welcome everybody. I'm going to rearrange the schedule. We have a couple members. I'm going to give them a little time to get here before we go into work sessions. So we'll go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2466.
Can we sit on the chair?
You may.
Okay.
We'll have.
So.
And Judith, well, let us know what bill we're hearing.
Thank you, Madam Chair members. House Bill 2466 requires photo radar signs to be at least 36 inches by 18 inches in size. It would also require the posting of photo radar signs between 400 and 500 yards before the location of the unit. You have for your consideration two amendments. We have in our possession at the moment the Dash 2 amendments, which restores current law such that the sign would be located between 100 and 400 yards before the photo radar unit. It would also require the sign to be posted at least 7 feet above the ground. We also just received the Dash 3 amendments, which would include the City of Milwaukee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lim, thank you for joining us. Should go ahead.
Chair Beyer and the members of the committee, I just want to thank you again hearing this House Bill 2466. And then instead of I try to say my able that the assistant and intern, she has been researching on this issue quite some time. So she is a very able lady. I would like to let the Darina Trehan speak on my behalf on the House Bill 2466.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Darina Trehan. I've been interning with Representative Lim this session. We're introducing today this House Bill 2466. A couple of amendments, as you mentioned, have been requested regarding this bill. The initial bill that was presented did have provisions such as to make the sign 7 feet from the ground and to make it 36 by 18. The bill that is ultimately being introduced seeks to raise the level of the sign from 2 feet from ground level. The bottom of the sign should be raised up 2 feet from ground level.
Another a different amendment.
That's the brand new agreement with the city and Beaverton. Yes, yeah, so
the city of Portland as well. The original intent behind the photo radar system did entail providing drivers adequate notice, and so what we are seeking to do is to provide drivers with adequate notice, and we believe by raising the sign that will accomplish.
And Madam Chair, what was the amount of the raised sign, because the Dash 2 amendment at least 7 feet above ground level?
The new one that they're talking about is 2 feet, but I, in the original bill, I don't
feet
think
above ground level?
Yes. Is what they're proposing now.
May I clarify? The original bill, we said at the 7 feet above the ground, which is the same sign of the stop signs. So many people can drive, can see it right away. And the city of Portland and also the Beaverton expressed some concerns when the wind blowing to the signs, it might fall down, may hurt someone else, and some liability issue. So out of that concern, today we discussed it. As long as it's 2 feet above the ground, and 14 by 14, 24 by 24 might be sufficient enough where the drivers could see it when they drive. Intention, I want to make sure that the drivers can see that that the warning sign for a radar ahead. So that was the original intention, then I agree with it. The origination of this bill came when I was driving by Beaverton area, and I saw the photo radar, but I didn't see the sign ahead of it. And I went back, check it out. They laid out on the ground 45-degree angle. So very few people can see the sign. So intention is they need to see it before the photo radar. So at least if we could put photo radar enforced ahead, at least if it's 2 feet above the ground, that have a better chance to see, the drivers a better chance to see the signs. Photo radar ahead.
Representative Butler, the original bill itself does not have any height in it. It has a distance.
Thank you, and I do appreciate that. My concern is that Senator Lim realized that if it's 2 feet above the ground, that a car parked along the side or a car between you and the photo radar sign will totally obliterate any vision of it. So I guess I'm having some problem with that. I realize, Madam Chair, that a sign that's stuck up as high as a stop sign can blow over, and there might be issues with that. But if we're going to have these photo radar signs, the law presently provides that there should be an unobstructed view of a sign that it's going to come up. And to put it 2 feet, 2 feet is as good as laying at a 45-degree angle and not visible to anyone, in my way of thinking. I mean, Madam Chair, in all fairness, if the sign was at 2 feet and Representative Lim and we put it 2 feet high and 2 feet in front of the witness table right now, and we stood him back 30 feet from the desk, he couldn't see it.
Yeah,
it would be totally obstructed.
Certainly that is the issue. Still, I believe it's better than on the ground. That's one issue. Second issue is that the medal that the signs that the officer is holding is about 7 to 8 pounds. And then if we have to put the footings, it could be larger and much heavier. Make sure when wind blow, in case of 50 miles an hour, make sure it doesn't fall down. And we need to compromise between the liability and some safety issue. So to me, that the higher the better, 7 feet is better to see for sure, but it's up to the members of this legislature. As long as 2 feet above, as the instigator of this bill, House Bill 2466, I'm fine.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lim, so you're still keeping in line 23C, at least 36 inches by 18 inches.
No.
You're taking that out.
We have an amendment for that. We're just eliminating that. Keep it the original. Is that the 200 feet?
So, follow up, please.
Yes, follow up.
So, there is nothing that defines how large this sign will be. Is that correct?
According to the information we have given from the Beaverton City, it has to be 24 by 24.
There, follow up?
Follow up.
There is nothing in the bill that says how large it should be, that I can see.
Okay. Nothing in the bill, I understand that could be the federal requirement, 24 by 24.
Yeah. And the City of Portland indicated that they currently have signs 24 by 24.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Butler.
Thank you. So this is really a work in progress. If I'm looking at lines 22, 23, and potentially interlineated between 23 and 24, we have first with the Dash 2 amendment, we have the 100 to 400, between 100 and 400 yards before the location of the photo radar unit
exactly.
would be restored as it is in present law.
Exactly.
Then with regard to line 23, an amendment which we do not presently have, mm-hmm. would be at least 24 by 24 in size, And then D, as I'm looking at the dash two amendments, which presently says at least 7 foot above ground level, would be restored to say at least 2 feet above ground level.
That's my intention.
Madam Chair, do I understand further that the 2 foot above ground level would be a vertical sign and would be unobstructed? Nowhere does it talk about any obstructions here.
Right.
So I'm assuming that it talks about that a sign must be posted announcing photo radar ahead, must have all of the following, but a sign isn't any good if it's obstructed or down or at a 45-degree angle. Or a car is parked in front of it. I'm concerned about this 2 foot.
May I give a further explanation?
Yes.
Sign is portable. And only, to my understanding, when the vans of a photo radar stationed certain places, and they cannot go more than 4 hours at one location, and so that the sign could be portable in certain areas, and maybe if some car parked in front of it might not be able to see it, but usually the cars are not allowed parking in that the zone area. So most of the cases it is visible. So as long as I'm concerned, it's like a lawn sign. When we have a camping, do you have that? Yes, okay. It's like a lawn sign and a little bigger than. And let me have that sign over there.
Yeah.
I'm not here to advertise my campaign.
Sure. Envelopes are coming around.
The camera. You got that?
This is at least 24 inches. And height also saying, height, that is the dimension of the signs. So this is very visible. So I'm happy as long as it's 2 feet above, then it could be 3 to 4 feet from the ground. And so that it's much better than laying on the ground that the 45 angle degree. Very few people can see that sign. So we just want to make sure and also it's fair, warning to the driver that the photo radar ahead or photo radar enforced. That's what I'm trying to do.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Beyer. As a person who regularly is reminded not to drive too fast by our OSP officers on I-84, isn't part of the... Do we really want to take away the surprise? Let me tell you what I'm thinking. I apologize. I can't find the correct words.
Yeah.
Every time I get pulled over on I-84 for doing something I shouldn't do, and I assume full responsibility because I am always wrong on them. There's never a sign that says an OSP officer is hiding behind this rock. And so I'm not sure why we would notify people that there's a potential for law enforcement coming up in front of them.
I think I have a good answer for that.
Okay.
And if you look at the lottery commission in our state, we promote the gambling. At the same time, we gave 1-800 line to prevent them gambling.
That's true.
This is the same way. And one side, we want you to gamble and give a lot of money to state. At the same time, one side, don't gamble it. If you gamble it, you are going to lose. So this is the same things. Photo radar, they can spit out the ticket, couple hundred, I'm not sure, couple hundred, about 50 to 80 ticket in a minute, if they could do it. And this is unfair to people driving. But the photo radar is not on the freeway. It is strictly local street and also the school zone area where there possibly a lot of accident could happen. If I may add, I'm responsible introducing this, bringing this photo radar bill that 1993. I was the vice chair of transportation at the Senate, and it is me that helped to pass this bill. But I got caught on this four-wheeler some time ago. But that's fine. I paid my fine. It was I overspeeded in that area. But if I have seen the sign for a radar ahead, I could have slowed down. So it is a personal to me, and also it's a fair issue to the many others.
Any other questions? I always wonder about the temporariness of this. I know that there are some areas that these are very permanent, and everybody in the town knows that they're there. and I wonder if they even work anymore. It's just more of a deterrent than it is actually to ticket, because people certainly do slow down at that point.
I think this is photo rate, that's a good thing. But as long as I'm a legislator, this is not coming to my district. And I adamantly fight that if they bring in to my district. Originally, they intended to bring the photo radar to Port Ben and Gresham. I said, no, not in Gresham. And Beaverton wants it, so I let the Beaverton have it. So let me assure you, as long as I'm a legislator, it's not going to happen in my district, because we don't like it over there.
Thank you, Representative Lim.
Madam Chair, that's like a tax. The best one is on somebody else.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much for hearing this.
Do we proceed with the dash 3 amendments to include Milwaukee?
May I present that? Thank you.
Yes.
Madam Chair, committee, for the record, my name is Carolyn Tomei, and I represent Milwaukee and Southeast Portland. And I come very contrary to what Representative Lim just said. Milwaukee very much wants photo radar. And as some of you know, I was on the City Council and later Mayor of Milwaukee, and during my term there, we kept cutting all budgets, but including the police. And we have fewer police officers now than we had 10 years ago, even though we have more people living in Milwaukee, and literally tens of thousands of people who drive through Milwaukee. And so we need this bill. We very much would like to have photo radar in Milwaukee. So I present to you the Dash 3 amendments that on page 1 of the printed bill after line 12, we would just insert Milwaukee. So I would ask you to, even though Representative Lim does not want photo radar in Milwaukee, or in Gresham, that you allow it in Milwaukee. And I hope that Representative Lim drives through Milwaukee.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the Representative Tomei and the former mayor of Milwaukee, what's the price, what's the total cost of one of these systems all set up and operating so that the city, where do you give us kind of a schematic?
Oh, boy. Representative Chair Beyer, Representative Butler, boy, I wish I could have the answer for you, and I don't, but I will get it for you.
And there may be folks here that can tell us that.
Yes.
But I just your experience in seeing these in operation in other places, they are a good deterrent. That
absolutely they are. Just seeing that sign, and that's one of the reasons I approve of the sign, although I tend to agree with Representative Smith. Why should you warn people that it's coming up, that everybody should be going by the speed limit? But it is a deterrent. Even when the sign is not working, the radar, it's a deterrent seeing that sign that it's in operation.
And Madam Chair, I just would say this, that in Mexico, when you travel along Mexico and other parts of the third world, they've got a little spot, a little sign on the road, and it's not a small sign. It's a large sign. It's wide, and it shows a bunch of little bumps, and they're called topes. And there's a saying in Spanish that the topes, cada topes vale 10,000 cops. For one set of topes, it's worth 10,000 cops. So you're gonna get some value out of that, because everybody slows down for the topes, and when one set of topes isn't enough to really slow them down, about 30 feet in front of those, you got another set of topes. So they're very, very effective in slowing down. And guess what? People do slow down, and you know, traffic starts to move on the side streets, and people can start to cross the road and those kinds of things. So they're very effective.
They are.
They're better than having the actual police there.
Interesting. Yeah. And if I can just say one more thing, yes. Chair Beyer and committee. As I said, we have 99E, McLaughlin Boulevard, goes right through the city of Milwaukee. It goes right between our main street and the riverfront. And 224 goes from McLaughlin out to 225. So, as I said, we get tens of thousands of cars going through, right through the middle of our city every day. And this is one of the ways that we can help control some of that traffic. So I urge you to vote for -3 amendments.
Madam Chair, I've been lost in that Trump area several times myself with no intention of being in Milwaukee, and I found myself there when I've taken a bridge this way or that way.
Weren't you lucky, Representative?
Well, no.
Any further questions?
No other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have Sergeant Dan Costello from the Portland Police Bureau, and maybe Mark would like to come up and...
We don't even have a stoplight in Morrow County. We don't.
It's strategically placed 2 feet above the ground.
I can stand there and hold it 2 feet above the ground for a while.
Good afternoon. Mark Landauer with the Office of Government Relations for the City of Portland. With me is Dan Costello with the Portland Police Bureau's Traffic Enforcement Division. And we have been working with Representative Lim on his bill. And we did have a number of concerns as originally drafted. And they've been gracious enough to listen to our concerns. And I think we're almost there. Just a couple of points real briefly. We were having some problems with the 7-foot requirement for a number of reasons. Also, the distance where the signs needed to be placed for some very practical reasons. At this point, just so you're aware, our current sign is 24 inches by 24 inches. You see one before you. We have absolutely no qualms with raising the sign 2 feet above ground level. That is fine and perfectly fair. And Representative Butler's suggestion that it be very visible, unobstructed, that's been our practice and continues to be our practice. That gives us absolutely no heartburn. The one thing I might mention, though, on line 19, it specifies what the language on the sign must say. We think that the current language on our sign that you see before you is adequate. If you were to require a change in that, we have 2 units. We use signs for both of those units, obviously. It would cost us about $50 to change each sign. We think the existing sign that we have is adequate, but if you feel that Representative Lim's suggested or recommended language is better, I don't think we'll have terribly much heartburn with that either. And Dan here can give you some more detail about the costs of these units, as Representative Butler had asked.
I have a quick question for you, because as I look at the bill, this what the original language was, that photo radar is in use. So was that pretty loose language, because that's not what your sign says? So
yeah, one could certainly interpret that in a number of different ways, Chair Beyer, and obviously we interpreted it rather broadly. I think the 3 words that we use are pretty clear, that there's a photo radar unit that is enforcing the speed limit. And if the legislature believes that that needs to be specified in statute, again, we'll do it.
Oh, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On line 17, page 1, it says, may not be used for more than 4 hours per day in any one location. How do you enforce that? Are these set on timers?
May I answer that, Representative Smith?
You want to identify yourself real quick?
I'm Sergeant Dan Costello from the Portland Police Bureau's Traffic Division.
Thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to testify. Representative Smith, I'm in charge of the gentlemen, the officers that go out and man these vans. These vans are not unmanned. They have to be manned by Portland police officers. So the officers are inside the van, and so as far as how do I regulate that, I tell them they don't do it, and they listen to their sergeant. And the other thing, the other thing is that, we always look at, is this ticket going to pass muster in front of a judge? I've got to be honest with you, we've got to do that. Well, so it would be very easy. These are all public records of my deployment logs, my visual observation logs that the officer fills out, all that sort of stuff. So all a defendant would have to do is ask for those logs that show that my guy was there for 4 hours and 5 minutes and he got his ticket at 4 hours and 4 minutes, the ticket would go bye-bye because the judges abide by the law and the bills, they're very good at it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your comments have been really, really illuminating. These aren't cameras sitting up somewhere taking pictures. This is a physical...
van.
This is a Ford E150 van, a Ford E150 van, fully marked as Portland Police Bureau. They've actually even got lights and siren on them. Not overhead like the state police or the normal cars do, but I mean they're well marked as Portland Police Bureau vehicles. The cameras are inside. The radar is inside the window, the rear window. Takes a picture as you violate the speed. Takes a picture of the back of the car as it goes past the front of the vehicle to get the rear license plate.
Just a quick comment. It's my belief or my opinion that we don't even need legislation for this. You folks ought to be able to do that on your own. That surprised me. I didn't realize that. I have a little camera up somewhere taking pictures of people.
In other states... that are not driver responsibility states. State of Oregon is a driver responsibility state. As a police officer, I have to be able to testify that that ticket somebody, I'm not going to point at, somebody received.
You can point at me.
Yeah, okay. That you received, I have to hold up a picture in court and say, that's you, and the judge has to believe me for me to be able to, in other states that have photo radar. Washington, D.C. is a perfect example. They have 12-foot high posts along the streets with the photo radar camera on there, and it takes a picture of the car, and the registered owner gets the ticket.
That's how I thought it worked.
There are just two different models that are out that are being deployed in the United States. One is the owner responsibility that the sergeant just described in Washington D.C. In Oregon, it's the driver responsibility model, and the legislature made a clear distinction and choice in going after that particular model.
Right.
Interesting.
So, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark, Dan, thank you for your testimony, but this speed photo enforced, could you have that sign erected in 50 different places around town and then just place the van in one of those 50 places for 4 hours at a time? Because... it doesn't say, as the bill indicated, photo radar ahead. It just says the speed is photo enforced, and I'm concerned about any change of that language to this kind of language.
We presently are required by the ORS to at all entrances into the city of Portland to post a 36 by 18 inch sign that says speeds photo enforced. And in the city of Portland. And then we are required to have a sign 100 to 400 yards before the van, and that's the sign we use. As Mark was saying, Representative Butler, we can certainly change the language because we're not talking hundreds of thousands of dollars to change a sign. This sign right here exceeds federal sign standards for the photo radar sign that is supposed to be behind any photo radar van. The current federal standard says 24 by 18, so we're 24 by 24.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a good thing to have at all entrances of the city and posted around the city, but I think that the photo radar ahead is probably very descriptive for the for the portable sign that you're going to move 2 feet in the air and move it around with the van.
And I would be totally agreeable with Rick.
Thank you very much.
Like Mark was saying, we can certainly do what you want.
The model that we've used in Portland is it's not a gotcha thing. We want people to simply slow down. We make sure that the signs are visible. This is a safety and livability issue for many of our neighborhoods throughout the city. This doesn't make us a great deal of money. In fact, before 2003, we lost money on this program regularly with every citation that we issued. So we're not in this for the dough. We're in this to make our streets safer. And if the committee feels that photo radar ahead is a more appropriate warning for drivers who are, again, exceeding the speed limits, we're happy to do it.
And Madam Chair, I think Mark and Dan are the folks that can tell us about the cost of these units.
I can give you a rough estimate because in my case at the City of Portland, we do not own the equipment. We own the vans. Our vendor, ACS, State and Local Solution, owns the equipment. I have been told by our program manager at the City of Portland that a van's worth of equipment, which are the two cameras and the computer and the radar system itself, run about $100,000. As far as Representative Tomei, you know, what you're going to be doing when you go out for bid and that sort of stuff, you're going to be presented with a lot of different operations. You can buy the equipment if you want. The thing about the way we do it is if it breaks, guess who gets to fix it? They fix it. I don't. And our contract says that my vans have to be working. And so they fix it in a hurry.
There is one other technical reason why we use ACS, and that is because they're the only vendor that provides a wet film system. And wet film, we've found over the course of several years, provides a greater resolution because, again, we're in an owner responsibility model. If you have wet film, your ability to actually see through the windshield is greater to be able to do the gender match that's required for us to be able to issue a citation because we look at that photo, check to ensure that the gender of that driver, which in most cases we can tell, matches the registered owner through the DMV.
Correct.
And if we get a match, we can issue that citation. With the digital formats, the technology is getting better, and we're going to actually be testing some new equipment here in the near future, but we have not been satisfied up to this point with the digital formats to be able to actually look through that windshield to be able to really get a good glimpse of the driver.
So, Madam Chair, the lease cost, did we get the lease cost? $100,000 if you want to buy it.
Right.
How much do you pay for the lease?
Well, I'll tell you what the City of Portland pays, and that is $2,500 per van lease fee per month. And then there is a sliding scale on the...
I think it's 27.
The 1-800 is like 1-800. The first 1-800 paid citations, so a violator pays them, is like $27. 801 to 1,200 citations are $22. This is all from memory, so I may be off, but it's right in that range. 1,201 to 1,600 is $20, and 1,601 citations above, to however many we get per month, is $18 per citation. We routinely issue about 2,500 citations paid, get about 2,500 paid citations per month.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I would have showed up on time, I probably wouldn't have to ask this question. It's probably been answered already. In the City of Portland, what's the cutoff in terms of how far over the speed to when you receive a ticket?
The secret.
The secret. We're about to get him on the record.
It's all recorded, right? No, it's 11 miles per hour.
Is that what it is?
If my vans are out in a 35 mile an hour zone, the flash will occur at 46.
Got it. Thank you. The secret.
Now you know. Sergeant Costello, we didn't really give you a chance to give your testimony. So would you like to do some what you haven't covered?
Well, I just had a single page and that sort of stuff, so I would, if it wouldn't mind. Thank you for allowing me to testify. When I came down here, I didn't realize that Mark had been doing a great job and been talking to Representative Lim about some of the things. But I just wanted to say that our current sign is 24 by 24 inches. That's 576 square inches. It exceeds the federal sign standards for the photoradar sign that is required behind photoradar vans. That's in the federal standard sign booklet that we have. A 36 by 18 sign is the sign that's up on the city. All the freeways, Burnside, Highway 26, all the entrances into the city, which is a requirement by our statute. Currently, we place that sign on an A-frame. So we've been talking about 2 feet, the bottom edge above the ground. We presently have been placing probably the center of the sign 2 feet above the ground, just as a standard. The other thing we do is that we place the sign on telephone poles. My guys take hammer and nail out, and they'll place it. I don't allow them to place it open to go like this over their head. So I was against the 7-foot rule. But quite honestly, it's easy to pound a nail right here, and it's got a hole in it. And that sort of stuff. That will not work in windy conditions. It will not work in windy conditions. The sign falls over very quickly. The current requirement that we're taught, the amendment, which is the 2 feet, the bottom of the sign, 2 feet above the ground, that would be fairly easy on an A-frame board. The other thing is that I have, under current legislation, I have between 100 and 400 yards to place this sign. So to answer Representative Butler's concerns about a car being there and blocking the A-board sign or something like that, it's a concern for us, too, because a couple different reasons. One, all that violator would have to do is go back and take a disposable camera picture of that sign, and his ticket would be thrown out by the judge because it is not visible. And secondly, we really enjoy public acceptance for photoradar and red light cameras. In the city of Portland, we enjoy a 73% approval rate, and that was on a 2005 or 2000, I think it was 2005 survey. We enjoy a 73% approval rate for red light cameras and photoradar because we go the extra step. We have a sign that exceeds the federal maximum. We place the warning signs we're at. We've got marked patrol vehicles or marked photoradar vans out there. We don't try to hide. The locations we've got are not an OSP trooper hiding behind a bridge abutment type of thing. They're out there on the side of the road in full view. If a person comes by my photo radar van and gets a ticket, I'm sorry.
They deserve it.
They deserve it, right? And quite honestly, speeding drivers know their actions can result in a ticket. A speed display sign. We're required by the to have a speed display sign in the back end of the photo radar van. And this thing is flashing. When you go by at 35 in a 35 zone, it flashes 35. And if you're 500 yards behind in a straightaway, and most of them are straightaway locations, you're going to see that. Wouldn't that draw your attention to, hey, there's something up here flip-flopping and doing signs? We take the vans to community meetings, neighborhood association newsletter type of things, open houses at the precinct. So I think we give drivers every chance we can. I really do. And we enjoy great public acceptance, and it is a tremendous deterrent to speeding in neighborhoods.
Representative Gilman.
Do you have neighborhood groups or people from a particular road call you and ask to have the van come out?
That is exactly how I pick the locations where the van goes and that sort of stuff. Is school zones, that's what the original legislation was for, was to promote safety in school zones and neighborhoods. So if I get a neighborhood association president calling me up, or even Mr. and Mrs. Smith calling me up and saying, I live on 106 south of Division, they come through here at 100 miles an hour. Well, they're always exaggerating, but we'll make that a photo radar location and go work it. So my locations that I have listed have all been generated by either their school safety zones. I go to PDOT and get a whole bunch of statistics from them that show that 108 and Division had a tremendous amount of accidents in 2005, and they were all speed related or citizen complaints.
I guess one or two, maybe. I don't know if you have an idea of how many you usually give out in a month period, a year period, and has it remained pretty steady? Does it fluctuate a lot?
It has. I'm averaging 2,400, 2,500 photo radar paid citations per month. I issued 26,800 and something last year. We had a year in 2003 where we worked real closely with the federal government on school safety. They gave me some overtime money, so the vans were deployed a lot more, a little bit more than they actually are now. And we did like 29,000 paid citations at that time. But the 26,000 per year is about average.
If my memory serves me correctly, our issuance rate is about 60%.
Right.
So, and I don't have all the data in front of me, Chair Beyer, but of those 60%, we're getting about 2,500 back each month.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Some are pleading innocent and are in fact innocent. There are others who plead innocent and are clearly the drivers, and we require them to make a copy of their driver's license and send it in with their certificate of innocence, and they think we don't check it. We do. So we're issuing at about 60%. So 40% of those citations, either we don't get a clear picture of the driver, or for example, the license plate has some mud on it. There are plenty of different reasons why a citation doesn't necessarily get issued.
Thank you. No other questions? Thank you so much for coming. It's been very informative.
Thank you for your time.
Andrea.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, legislative director for the ACLU of Oregon. It's actually the first time I've had the pleasure of appearing before you this session. I'm handing out something, and I just hold on, if you would be so kind to not look at it, I'll direct you to the specifics because it's just the law. ACLU opposes the use of this equipment, but I'm got to say I'm here more for some personal experience and legal research I've done on this from a personal experience, which I'm sure Representative Smith can appreciate.
Cannot.
I've never had a photo radar ticket.
Well, and there are two things. There are red light ones, which I just want to clarify. There's a red light law, which is the stationary ones, and then there's these vans. I was alleged to have violated one, but it was dismissed, so just to be clear on the record. But
legal representation.
I represented myself. But in doing this, I discovered that ORS 810.438 and the requirements set therein under a 2002 Court of Appeals opinion are irrelevant to the law. So I want to direct you, and then I will explain the decision. You'll see that 810.438 authorizing it and setting forth very specific requirements that jurisdictions must comply. And then if you would turn to your next page, and you will see 810.439, and it's citations based on a photo radar. It is the first sentence of that I want to focus on. Notwithstanding any other provision of the law in a jurisdiction using photo radar, and then certain conditions must be met. In 2002, in a case, State v. Kolish, and the site is 185 ORAP 418, the Court of Appeals held, in this case, ORS 810.438 imposes various requirements for the proper operation of a photo radar unit. Then ORS 810.4391A declares, notwithstanding any other provision of the law, only 7 enumerated conditions are required for the issuance of a valid speeding citation based on photo radar evidence. The court continues. That means that, regardless of what any other provision of law, including ORS 810.438, may say to the contrary, Only the enumerated seven conditions are required for the issuance of a valid speeding citation based on photo radar evidence. So as you look this session to amending ORS 810.438, it would be my assertion that that whole law is irrelevant. It is maybe, I suppose, guidance to jurisdictions of what they might want to do to issue citations, but it is not binding. And anyone who objects to a failure of a jurisdiction to comply with the requirements in point 438 loses. And they don't have any requirement. So I think that's very important. I'm actually surprised in the 5 years since this decision that this body apparently has not been apprised of that, and one would hope would fix it. Because I think this body has made decisions about not only implementing photo radar, but what are the requirements of jurisdictions to do it, and I think those really should be honored. I want to then point out a few or make a few comments on some of the testimony you've already...
Chair, can...
Yeah, sure. I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
No, that's okay.
Representative Tomei.
Representative Butler just spent... Oh, I'm not supposed to use names, am I? A good representative here just spent time with his grandchildren, and I want you to pretend that I am his six-year-old granddaughter, and tell me what you just said. I can give it to her.
Okay. Chair Beyer. I'm sorry, Representative Tomei. I'll be happy to walk you through at least as much in a different approach. If you look at point 438 in front of you, it says the jurisdictions that you can use it. It then says, and this is the first page of the document I gave you, subsection 2 says a photo radar system operated under this section may be used on streets in residential areas or school zones, may be used in other areas if the governing body of the city makes a finding, may not be used for more than 4 hours, may not be used on controlled access highways, and on, the requirements. Okay. Turn the page. Point 439 says, a jurisdiction using photo radar, a citation for speeding may be issued on the basis of a photo radar if the following conditions are met. The photo radar is operated by a uniformed police officer. It is operated out of a marked police vehicle. An indication of actual speed of the vehicle is displayed within 100 feet. Signs indicating are posted. The citation is mailed. And on and on. The court decision said those requirements that I just read you under point 439 are the only requirements that a jurisdiction has to comply with in issuing a photo radar ticket. All the ones that I read you on the previous page, all the requirements that this legislative body said are necessary and appropriate before you use this technology are not required.
Madam Chair.
Representative Butler.
So Andrea, if I were to insert, for just the purpose of this discussion, I'm not a lawyer, you are, but if I were to insert the words after 810.439, citation based upon photo radar response citation, if I were to insert right after one, with the exception of ORS 810.438, notwithstanding any other provision of the law of jurisdiction, that would then bring 438 and make it relevant.
Chair Beyer, Representative Butler, yes, if you removed the notwithstanding language and said any other provision and said in addition to any other requirements, you, yes, the jurisdictions must also do the following. The bill in front of you, however, does not amend ORS 810.439. So you, under this legislation, there is a House bill on photo radar and red light in the judiciary. There's the Senate bill that Representative Tomei has offered through Milwaukee, photo radar and photo red light. This is just radar in the Senate side that's had a hearing.
So if I could follow up,
yes,
Madam Chair. So to make this a correct piece of legislation, we'd have to go to council and have them insert in 810.439 citations based upon radar response in addition to the requirements of ORS 810.439, notwithstanding any other provisions, then on from there. Something of that nature, so that we've got both sections of the law that apply uniformly.
Chair Byer, Representative Butler, I see no reason to have the notwithstanding any other provision of the law language in this. Certainly legislative council can decide, and you all can decide if you want to say including 438 or just saying any other provision of law, because you may have other, you don't want to get in trouble with if you have a new provision that you amend in another session that puts additional requirements, but you've narrowed the citation section sufficiently that it's irrelevant. So you don't have to pay for this legal advice because it you don't have to take it, but I would urge a way that gives you flexibility in the future.
Madam Chair, I just say that the relating to clause in 2466 is certainly broad enough that the amending 810.438 could also add the 810.439 in the relating to clause and have council address this issue, which appears to be a latent defect since 5 years ago with the promulgation of the case that Andrea has mentioned today.
Representative Smith, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned that this all came about as a result of a court decision. What court decision was that? Do you have a copy?
Chair Byer, Representative Smith, I don't have a copy. I cited to you at the very beginning of my testimony. It is State v. Kolisch, K-O-L-I-S-C-H, and the site is 185 ORAP. That's O-R-A-P-P. That's the Oregon Appellate Decisions, not the Supreme Court, 418. It was decided December 26, 2002. I had believed and I maintained that the photo radar van that, with all due respect, I on Morrison Bridge, I never saw. never saw signs, never saw anything. And I have to say it's kind of ironic that the officer testifies, well, as a defense, I could take a photo of the sign. Well, I'm sorry, but I got the notice 3 weeks later. And that's one of the problems with this use of technology, and I'll mention a few more. You know, when you're pulled over, Representative Smith, if there was an emergency...
Can you pick on the other
okay, well, yes, sir. Chair Byer, Representative Smith, you were the only one who disclosed, other than me, that you were subject to a speeding violation. But when you are pulled over by an officer and you are determined to be in violation of our traffic codes, it does give you an opportunity to explain if there is any reason. And I have to say, again, based on personal experience, which I don't normally do in this building, but I did not see the truck. It was a light day. I was not on the phone. It's a lovely photo, by the way. There wasn't rain. I didn't see a lot. I don't recall if there was traffic. It was 3 weeks after I got it, and it may have been tucked over on the kind of a cup area of the Morrison Bridge. I didn't see it. And that means I can't engage in any explanation at the time with the officer. I can't actually know what speed. I had no recollection of what speed I was going. I don't remember the events. I can't defend myself if it's my photo and the radar machine says it's a certain amount. It's kind of it. Now, I wanted to raise a concern, if I may,
Madam Chair, I'm struggling with your statement. Every time I've ever received a speeding ticket, I've always deserved it. Always have. And what I'm struggling with is the notion that I wouldn't be able to defend myself weeks later. People in this country are accused of crimes years later, and they have to defend themselves over actions that occurred years prior to that. And so I'm trying to struggle with how a speeding ticket is different from any other crime that a citizen may be accused of post the event.
Well, Chair Byer, Representative Smith, of course, I don't think actually speeding laws violations are a crime. They're probably a violation, but at least not yet. On the one hand, I'd say it's a policy decision. On the other hand, if you're accused of a crime, there's evidence that they're bringing forward, and you can challenge the evidence and you can get witnesses. And that's, of course, one of the concerns that ACLU has on expanding statute limitations in crimes, because it makes it harder for the defendant to be able to recreate the what they've alleged to have done and get the witnesses. But, you know, that's a policy decision that you all have made about whether you need to get the ticket at the same time. But I wanted to raise, if I may, some other concerns connected that we have with this policy decision, because in addition, you know, the officer read a number of, that they get $27 a certain number of tickets and $22 and $18, and that they don't buy the equipment because a vendor owns it. That's right, the vendor owns it, and they are making a lot of money off of each ticket. That's where the money's going. I believe I have read that they receive about 45% of the city's cut. Now, the city gets it, the state gets it, it's divided up. Now, why am I concerned with vendors? I'm concerned with vendors because the one that the city of Portland uses was charged with bribery in Edmonton, Canada, for a $90 million 20-year contract with the city. The vendor that Newberg uses has also been charged, or actually it was a mayor, I think, in a jurisdiction in Missouri, was charged with a bribery allegation. It troubles us.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm struggling with this. An officer who's sitting in a photo radar van has no idea if it's you coming down the road or me coming down the road or any other member coming down the road. And I'm not sure the correlation between someone who committed a crime in one area having any effect on the need for slowing down cars in the community. I'm not sure how that correlates. I don't understand how a vendor who's bribing somebody has any influence on whether or not I get a ticket because I'm going too fast through a...
Chair Beyer, Representative, please let me explain if as much as hopefully as best I can. This is not an officer driving next to you and witnessing or observing your speed limit and making a determination based on their experience, their eyesight, their whatever. They are using equipment that is calibrated and provided by the vendor. These are vendors who've engaged in bribery charges with other jurisdictions over this equipment. There have been other jurisdictions in the country that have used equipment from these kinds of vendors, and they are not calibrated correctly. So when you're talking about, and I'm not saying Oregon in this, but when you're talking about the red light, stop light situation, and I've heard testimony in judiciary, you know, that Portland and Oregon in its rules tries to be extremely careful about the designation of when someone, when it's orange and when it's red and when they shoot the photo. But in other states, it has not been. And the vendors make money for getting more and more tickets. And if you're going through the orange, not the red, and you get a ticket, or you're going through the green as it changes orange to getting a ticket, that's a problem if that's not actually a violation. Now, that's different than the photo radar vans. But again, it's technology and calibrations that are set by the vendor, and they make a good deal of money off of each ticket. There's no restriction. Now, the city could say, and they had said in previous testimony, they'll negotiate a contract with how much the vendor can have. But our government, this legislature, has not made any policy determinations like you have maybe I'm not sure in terms of lottery, of how much a vendor can profit over this type of equipment. And so I raise that. But it is one of the reasons we have concerns, because they can be abused. I'm not suggesting Portland has, but I am suggesting the vendor they are currently contracting with has been alleged to have engaged in illegal activity related to its machinery. I may leave it at there unless there are more questions.
Question. Representative Tomei.
And I'm not sure that it should go to you, Andrea, but isn't there a requirement about calibration, how often it should be done and how it's It's verified?
Chair Byers, Representative Tomei, there isn't in the law. Whether there are in rules, I do not know, or if there's some guidance. I'm trying to recall, I think the state said, or I can't recall the testimony, but it seems to me that if there isn't, there needs to be clear rulemaking done by the state to assure that the shenanigans that I think have happened in other states never happen here. You are adding more jurisdictions each session, and it would be my hope and expectation that they would all dutifully comply with the most protection for all of us so that we're not swept into this, but it does not hurt to require, either in law and rulemaking, some protections.
Madam Chair, maybe we could ask the Sergeant Costello to come back up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm back.
Thank you.
Sergeant Dan Costello, Representative. Could I answer your questions, or?
Could I ask the question? Could you tell us about the calibration and how that is verified and how often it is done?
It is done annually, and that is per our contract with the vendor. The vendor is the one that I was not involved in the original negotiation of our very original contract on photoradar, but I have talked to the person that was, and they basically said that there was a vendor that brought that up, that they calibrated annually. So the radar itself is calibrated annually. The cameras are serviced and calibrated annually. And then the computer, there's a computer module that runs the whole system. It's all brought down and changed out and certified by, and I don't know the name of the testing laboratory, but they've been accredited by the IACP, International Association of Chiefs of Police. And they're the only laboratory in the entire country that has been.
Can I follow up?
Yes, follow up.
Thank you. So why a three-week lag between somebody getting a ticket or between the supposed violation and getting a ticket?
Well, in photoradar, the legislation allows us to, we need a little bit of time to process the film, take a look at it, see if it matches gender match, and go through our process like that. We are allowed 6 business days to put it into the mail and mail it. And that is one of the requirements of the law, that we mail it to the registered owner within 6 business days. The three-week thing, I don't know how to answer her three-week period, because if she got the ticket, it was required to be mailed within 6 business days. It might be 3 more days of mailing, so it might be 9 days when she got it and opened it up, but I don't believe it was three. She may have opened it up in 3 weeks, but she got it before then, I believe.
Representative
Butler. Thank you, Madam Chair. Dan, your testimony, I'm interested in the numbers. You're regularly doing about 2,500 certified citations a month. That's 60%.
Right.
And so really what there is approximately maybe 4,000 that are actually coming up on the screen. That's 40% that not a clear photo, license plate not easily distinguishable and distinct. That's going to take some time.
Yes.
And you do that? That's part of your officer's business?
No. The vendor does that. They do the initial, what I call the initial screening. They bring it up on the screen, and they get the license plate if they can read the license plate. We lose 20, I believe it's 23% of our tickets to what we call gender match. If your vehicle is registered to you, but it's your wife that's driving it, and we can see that she is a female, and they bring it up on the screen, it's a gal, it's registered to Representative Butler, the ticket goes bye-bye.
Hmm. I see. So if it's registered to ABC Company, when your ticket's all...
No, we have a way to do that. We send it to, if it's, the criteria would be, is it a picture that could be used in court? And again, then we deal with glare, we deal with the tinted windshields and different things like that. But if it's at ABC Fire Extinguisher Company or something like that, we mail them the ticket. The letter that is mailed with it is changed just a little bit. We ask that person, the company, to identify the driver.
Follow up, if I may. Thank you, Madam Chair. So that would be counted amongst your 60% of the tickets.
Yes, it would.
At that point. And so those 60% of the tickets start at the first 800 at $27 back to the vendor, clear down to the, by the time you get on the 1600 and first ticket, at $13, was it?
$18.
$18.
That is correct.
Because I had the one just previous to that at $16. That must have been more.
Yeah, it was 27.
27, 23.
20, 18.
20 and 18, yeah. Okay. So at $18, 2,500 tickets, that's about 40,000, and then you're paying 2,500 a month base.
That's correct.
So this is about a $42,000 cost to the city of Portland, and you say that out of this, you're not making a lot of money. You're actually losing money on these.
We end up with about $40 to $43 per ticket after all the unitary assessments, crime victims, because most judges don't assign, unless you're a real jerk and have got 10 or 12 speeding tickets, most judges will not assign you the full $145 fine. It's usually right about $100, $110 or so. We end up with about $40 a site.
So $40, and your average payout must be something in excess of $20 on
yes.
these tickets. So you're coming back with about $20 after everything, and that's to help you pay for the $40,000+ a month lease. Well, of course, that's after the after their base month, $18 to $20 comes out of it. But then you pay your officers' time and the vehicle operating expense.
That's correct.
And then they pay for the primary match. And do they actually send those for you? Is that what they do?
That is correct. They mail them for us.
So really, the concern that Andrea expressed, that someone in their company is in charge and possession of a lot of information and could massage that information and could be guilty of high crimes and treason or whatever, that's a potential. You've lost control at that point.
No. The citations are not mailed until the officer that was sitting in that photo radar van has reviewed those citations and said, yes, I was there, I've done the visual observation, I heard the oral tone, you know, that sort of stuff. The thing about you're sitting in the van, you're looking out the back door. I've been a cop for 25 years. I would bet you $100 that I could go out on the street out here and with a radar gun and probably guess within, if you'd give me 3 miles an hour, I'd probably be able to tell you the speed of the cars coming down the street. So you have a visual observation, you have an oral, a whine, the Doppler tone, you've got all that. So
follow up, if I may.
Yeah.
So the information is always in the possession of that officer from the time that the photo radar ticket was shot and the time that it's actually sent out, then that officer, he or she, always has access and control over that information. It never goes back to ACS company where they have to make any decision in and of themselves.
No, they do. We have 35 millimeter film canisters. At the end of the day, those are put in a bag. ACS comes, gets them. They get developed. They digitize and put them into a computer. I'm sorry, put a computer program, and they do the first screening. So they look. They're the first persons to look at that picture, and it'll have the data block, which gives the speed, the date, time, location, that sort of stuff. They're the ones that say, yes, I can see the picture of that person driving. Yes, it's registered to a male and the male driving. And everything else clicks, matches. They send it to the officer for approval. At that particular point in time, then, yes, the officer has access to the information. ACS does not, and those tickets are then approved.
Thank you. Two things I want to establish, Madam Chair. Number one, that this is a very, very spendy process. I don't know what Milwaukee may have available for this kind of deal, but unless they're going to be doing 30,000 tickets a year off of this, this at $40,000 plus a month, plus the expenses that they have in the officer and the very competent officers, I might say, this isn't something that I'm going to be able to put in Harper, Oregon. Number two, I am concerned that there is a time lag between the time that all of this stuff is downloaded by the officer and then shipped and made available to ACS for their massaging of it, for their for their opportunity. And perhaps they are a great company, and perhaps they only ascribe to the very highest of standards, but if they have in fact had some problems in other states, makes no difference to us here, as long as we get good product out of them, I guess. But I am concerned that there is a potential that information is out of the control of some very highly trained, very skilled police officers, that they don't have the ability to say, hey, wait a minute, that was always under my control. I have access to the tapes before I shipped them to ACS, and after I got them back, I was able to do a reconciliation on that without any opportunity for any manipulation. So, please don't misunderstand, I'm sure members of the committee and Officer Costello. My concern is that wherever there's an opportunity for the loss of this control by some trusted peace officers, into the hands of someone else, there is an opportunity for human error and some slip-up. And I would be concerned about that, but then the second thing is that this is a very, very spendy program. You better have your numbers well worked out beforehand, because if you're going to get yourself into a $40,000, $45,000, $50,000 a month with your own local costs involved, at $50,000 a month, that's a $600,000 investment that the community is going to make, and if you can get it back, that's wonderful and good, and if you can break even, so much the better. But I'm just concerned that not everybody, this isn't made for everybody.
Thank you. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Some questions about the vendors. Are there multiple vendors to choose from in the state of Oregon?
Yes, there are, Representative Buckley, yes.
Can I keep following?
Do
all vendors work on a per-ticket basis, as has been explained today?
No. Totally what you contract. Representative Tomei will be doing that maybe in the near future, and it is totally, I mean, we could pay our vendor a set fee per van per month. The particular contract we have with ACS, we've enjoyed. We think it's the best all-around way to go for us. When I do a little research when I negotiated the contract in January, did a little research, and it ranges. If you use that $2,500 a month kind of frame, type of thing, it ranges. His Representative Butler's figures are about correct, $49,000. I'm the one that approves the invoices. They're usually $47,000 to about $49,000. Mm-hmm. But down in San Jose, California, they pay a flat van lease fee per month of $7,700, and per van, and so they're you're talking about the number of tickets, they're way above us. It just kind of depends on where you're at. We're smack dab in the middle in price comparison. So as far as the price comparison, we're smack dab in the middle.
I think I share Representative Butler's concerns. I appreciate his mathematical expertise on this, but to have an incentive for writing tickets is always a concern, I would think. Thank you.
May I address that, Representative Buckley, sure. Just real quick? The data that they have is the picture and the data block and that sort of stuff, and they do that hands-on processing. But if I was going to be a bad guy, I would want to increase the number of citations that were going to be issued.
Right.
And massaging was a term I heard, and that sort of stuff. So that's the way I would go. And we are the final check. We are the ones that compare our... When I'm sitting there in the van, and I do photo radar issues, when I'm sitting there in the van, I've got a white Beamer coming at me, four-door Beamer, white Beamer, wait for the oral tone. There's the indication, 46 miles an hour, and that sort of stuff. I've got that down. I am looking at these tickets and approving these tickets 3 days after that deployment. My memory hasn't gone that bad, so if a ticket comes through and I'm looking at the picture and I'm looking at the citation, I'm going, wait a minute, that's my log says white Beamer. I mean, it's not a brown SUV pickup or something like that.
So you do log every car.
You bet. Yeah.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
we heard that these are being calibrated.
Yes.
So I'm struggling with how you would massage the numbers. The only way you're going to have a photo taken of you, I assume, is if you're going over the speed that's...
That is correct.
Heard is 11
that
miles
is correct,
over.
Reverend Smith. That is correct.
And so I'm not sure how you massage it, because the only way you're going to be clicked is if you broke the law. Now the question is of 100% of clicks, how many of those are you going to be able to prosecute? And what we would hope, what I'm assuming you're going to hope is that the company who's reviewing the 100% is going to do as thorough of a job as possible. And if that number is higher, they're just doing their job.
That's correct.
Matching it up.
That's correct.
And so I'm not sure how that's a massaging, but rather more of a thoroughness of work. Am I missing something?
Well, let me answer that point, maybe. I'm the one that has to sit in court and testify to the validity of this ticket. It ultimately boils down to that. I'm in that van. I'm watching that car come at me at a high rate of speed. I'm saying, boy, he's going to be 50 miles an hour. I hear the audible warning. I see the visual sign. I see the flash of the strobe light almost, you know, taking the picture, and I've got it written down on my visual log. So now it boils down to, did the equipment take a good enough picture for me to be able to testify in court that it was you that was driving that vehicle? Okay, him. I have to be able to testify that. So that's why. Now, here comes the ticket review. Okay. Oh, boy, that's a great picture. I'm going to be able to do it. So I approve the ticket, and that's when they get mailed the ticket, and they get the opportunity to, you know, pay it, plead not guilty, go show up in court, all that sort of stuff.
And so just to follow up, and I don't mean to use the word that Representative Butler used, but I'm not sure you could massage it.
You know, about the only thing you could massage would be the actual speed.
Right.
Instead of 52, you could make it 72 to raise the fine up. But again, the officer is there, and there's a lot of difference between 52 and 72.
Okay.
When you're sitting in a van.
Can I follow this just really quick? But that's not going to affect the level of pay that the company receives, because they're getting compensated per match they make.
That's correct.
So they have no incentive to increase the speed limit.
No, that's true. That's true. That's true.
Madam Chair,
Representative Reed.
Okay, fine.
I'll defer to Representative Butler. Come back to me.
Thank you. And Representative Reed has had his hand up for some time, and I appreciate you deferring. But remember also that ACS gets paid based upon the number of tickets, and they are the folks that are ultimately responsible for the calibration.
Right.
So, in effect, for ACS, they have every incentive to be very, very, to fudge on the high side, and I use the word manipulation, so I'll change that from manipulation to fudge, onto the high side on the potential of the calibration, because a 1 mile difference from 11 miles now to 12 miles over, and 1 mile's at 46 mile an hour versus 47 miles an hour, is probably something that a very trained judge can say, I think this was 47 or 48, And as Dan said earlier, hey, I can do this within 3 miles. I can do it within 3 miles.
The one vulnerability is right there.
So 46 versus 48, 49, and that's where I'm concerned about is you still have, and unfortunately I've had one of these speed traps, a true speed trap, in my district at one time, and it almost shut down southeastern Oregon. It was down at Jordan Valley, and the folks had it all figured out. And the judge was in on the deal, and the chief of police was in on the deal, and it made national magazines because it was a true, true, true speed trap. So the concern was that, hey, as long as I'm calibrating it, and I'm looking at my speedometer as I'm coming through Jordan Valley, and it says I'm going 25, and he nails me for going 27, and hey, it's only a $35 ticket, but he's right, and I'm saying, But I've got it right here. I was only going, and he says, nope, I'm calibrating it, and I am the last authority on it. And so that was the concern that I had, is that if they're the folks that are responsible, and remember, they get the kickback on the number of tickets that are actually coming out. So, the other question that Representative Buckley asked was, wait a minute, there are other companies out there. We are also saying that ACS was the only company, they were the only vendor that had the wet film method, which gave you the highest number of resolution, highest amount of resolution, and the highest percentage. And 60% isn't a great, I mean, you know, 60% in business, you'd go broke. But here, 60% is evidently satisfactory. So, there's a lot of issues there, and those are the kinds of concerns that I'd want to have. And I do appreciate Dan mentioning that they do come back, and the officer is actually maintaining a log. And he can guess on his log and then look and say, well, it says 50, and I thought they were going maybe 47. Well, if that's maybe what's happened, that there is some degree of flux there, and those folks are calibrating the machinery, they have every reason to calibrate the machinery just a little bit high. Just a little bit high. Just fudge it just a tiny bit.
Chair Byer, may I respond to Representative Butler? It's not ACS that's certifying the machinery. It's a national laboratory that is certified by the International Association of Chiefs of Police. They get certified every year. And so they're the ones that are calibrating the machinery, not ACS. So that's my response to
okay,
that.
Thank you.
Representative Reed.
I'm glad we
thank you,
Madam Chair. I'm glad we came back to the ticket review process, and Sergeant Hess, in a sincere way with no expectation of what the answer might be. How often does an officer get through the log and say, or do you have a general sense of how often they might say, that one's not right, that's not consistent with my log and what the picture says, and I'm getting rid of that one? What is that, often or rarely, or...?
Maybe once a month we have a equipment malfunction. These are cameras. The film breaks or something like that, and it takes them one or two violators that go by. Wow, that's 50 miles an hour, and it doesn't make sense or something like that. But they shut down, okay. And those two or three people that went by at that speed, they're not issued tickets because, of course, then I've got an issue with equipment malfunctions, and again, we fall back to, in front of a judge, I have to be able to testify to all these things that were brought up. I have to be able to testify to all those things, and if one of those things aren't there, it's an easy out for the violator.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for
being
here. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2466. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2071. And my apologies for opening a work session on 2071 now that I've lost Representative Buckley.
Judith. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2071 increases the service charge from $1 to $2.50 per transaction that agents of the State Marine Board may impose for issuing temporary permits to operate boats. You do have before you the Dash 1 amendments that Representative Butler had suggested, and those authorize the State Marine Board agents to charge $2.50 per transaction for the next three calendar years from 2008 through 2010. It increases to $3.75 per transaction for calendar years encompassing 2011 to 2013, and then it would further allow the State Marine Board to issue an order revising the fee beginning in 2014. From that point, and every 3 years thereafter based on the Consumer Price Index. This measure has a no revenue impact, and we've also received a no fiscal impact on this particular bill. We do have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, but also a letter from the Speaker giving permission to rescind that referral if the committee so deems fit. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just by way of comment, none of this, because there is a non-ways and means, non-fiscal, non-revenue, because 100% of this, all is local retailer fee, and this is the first time in many years that fee has been increased by testimony from Paul Don Hoffner. So, Madam Chair, the Dash 1 amendment accomplishes all of the kinds of things that we had agreed that should be in the bill, and I would make a motion that the Dash 1 amendments dated February 27th, 2007 be appended to House Bill 2071.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves the Dash 1 amendments. to House Bill, well, dated 22707 to House Bill 2071. Any discussion?
I think it's a great idea, Madam Chair.
Seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Oh, any objections? I'll say the word first before. Seeing no objections, the dash one amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move that the committee rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means to House Bill 2071 is amended with the dash one amendments, and that we refer this bill to the House, the floor of the House of Representatives, with a due pass recommendation in its A amended format.
Representative Butler moves House Bill 2071 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation, and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Any discussion? Seeing none, those of the opinion that House Bill 2071 should be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley, excused. Representative Butler?
Yes.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Chair Beyer?
Aye.
House Bill 2071 is amended. It's passed. Do I have a carrier?
Representative Buckley. I'll volunteer Representative Buckley. That's an easy one.
any objections?
If he objects to that, I'll be happy to carry it now.
Thank you. We will let you know.
I'll be happy to.
I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2071 and open a work session on House Bill 2297.
Madam Chair, members, House Bill 2297 establishes a speed limit of 15 miles per hour for narrow roadways in residential districts. This measure, you'll see the dash one amendments coming from Vice Chair Tomei, that insert, if you look on the bill, excuse me, we're deleting section 2, that's page 1, lines 7 through 10, and inserting a new definition that would be a definition for narrow residential roadway to mean a two-way roadway that is one located in a residence district and two not more than 18 feet wide at any point between two intersections or between an intersection and the end of the roadway. It also inserts then that term residential so that the bill now references the narrow residential roadway as the applicable term. We have received both a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact on the measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith.
Madam Chair.
Representative Butler.
This is an excellent safe neighborhood bill. It really makes some good common sense. And I commend Representative Tomei for bringing forward the dash one amendment to it so that we can encourage safe neighborhoods. And you know, one of the things that we talked about in committee earlier was, you know, this is really a common sense approach. Unfortunately, there isn't a lot of things common about common sense anymore. So I would certainly follow Representative Tomei's lead as she moves the dash one amendments, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
If I may, Madam Chair, I did work with the City of Portland and other jurisdictions, and they seem to be very happy with this and with the wording, so I think it satisfies everyone. So I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2297.
Representative Tomei moves the dash one amendments dated 3507 to House Bill 2297. Any discussion? Seeing none, those of the opinion that the dash one amendment to dated 2507 be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed no.
Aye.
Oh, never mind. I'm kidding. Without objection. Seeing none, dash one amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2297 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Tomei moves the House Bill 2297 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Okay. Those of the opinion, House Bill 2297 should be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Will vote aye, and those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley, excused. Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Meyer.
Aye. House Bill 2297, having received the required majority, is passed.
May I carry it, Madam Chair?
Any objection? Seeing none.
Excellent. Excellent legislation. Great opportunity. And thank you again, Representative Tomei, for working with all those disparate groups that had various kinds of concerns. And I promise that I won't bring my motor home up and turn it around and Greg Chamos' driveway.
Thank you. The House Committee on Transportation is adjourned.
Thank you.
Good job.